The Super Bowl. The Oscars. The State of the Union. Okay, if I asked you, what's the Super Bowl? Everybody knows, right? I mean, people all over the world would know, certainly in America. What about the Oscars? Do you know what the Oscars are? Of course you do. Everybody knows what the Oscars are. Even if you don't, like, follow entertainment, you know what the Oscars are. You know, they give out awards to movie stars for movies. And even if you're not a sports fan, even if you hate sports, you know what the Super Bowl is. But the State of the Union, most people don't know what the State of the Union is. I tested it out. I went out on the streets and I asked people.
Do you guys know what the State of the Union is?
I feel really stupid right now.
Do you know what the State of the Union is?
No.
No?
Nope.
Don't know.
No.
Yeah, well, the president talks about the U.S.
Who does the State of the Union?
More or less, it's the president.
But could be someone else.
I believe so, yeah.
Could it be anybody?
Maybe not anybody.
Only the president or other people?
Ooh, man.
Like, you couldn't do it.
Like, I couldn't do it.
And how often does he do this?
Once a term, but I know he's given two already.
Is that because he's Trump? He's just trying to get extras in?
Probably.
Do you ever watch it?
Is it on TV?
No, it's only on Instagram.
Oh.
No, it's big. It's big on TV. They'll
black out the Super Bowl for the State of the Union? I don't know about that. Okay, if any one person could give the State of the Union, who would you want it to be?
Barack Obama again?
Barack Obama again? He wants four more years over here.
You.
Me!
Kiefer Sutherland. Because of his role in the show.
Designated Survivor.
Yes.
We are in a pop culture reality world.
Kiefer Sutherland should give the State of the Union. But the reality is, most people have no idea what the State of the Union is. You can tell me what the Super Bowl is. You can tell me what the Oscars are, even if you don't like them. But most people can't tell you what the State of the Union is. And most people don't care. And who can blame them? I mean, why should they? We watch the Oscars. We watch the Super Bowl because they are entertaining. They're dramatic. They're unpredictable, full of surprises. We know the rules of the game. We know the layout. But we don't know exactly what's going to happen. We don't know who's going to win. And it's an experience. The State of the Union? Not so much. I mean, I've been watching State of the Unions for literally, like, off and on, 20 years. I mean, Obama, Bush, Clinton. I think I even watched one with Reagan. And they are all predictable and boring. A guy standing up there, droning on and on, reading off his teleprompter about the accomplishments and the things he's going to do for America. I mean, I feel like I'm like in ancient history class, ancient American history. It's like what they did back in the 1800s, in the 1700s, before they had television, before they had even radio, way before they had the internet. It's just 90 boring minutes. They make even the worst imaginable Oscar speech that goes on forever seem totally hyper-engaging. That is, until last night. I was podcasting during the actual State of the Union, so I didn't get to watch it until later on, till afterwards, late at night. And I watched the whole thing, but going into it, I'd already read things about it, seen what people had said, but even then, I wasn't prepared for what I saw. I mean, it was a total show. It was pure entertainment for 90 minutes. I actually, for the first time, watched the whole thing. I didn't want to miss anything. I didn't want to stop. Normally, I'm like, let me fast forward to the next part. I did not want to stop watching. I was glued to it. Now, I'm a political guy, but as I said, even as a political guy, I normally can't get through them. I just sort of keep going to try to get the key information, like out of a boring lecture in a class. And you just kind of, oh, I got to hang on for the important stuff. Not last night. I mean, let me say, the State of the Union in and of itself is a kind of an interesting theatrical experience. Because there's all kinds of rules and decorum that go with it. The president comes in, people shake his hands, people who don't like him don't. The president stands on the podium, the vice president sits behind him on one side, the person who runs the House of Representatives, the Speaker of the House, sits behind him on the other side, and in a situation like we have today, where you have a divided government politically, that means you have Mike Pence sitting behind Trump on one side, and Speaker Pelosi, who hates his guts, sitting behind him on the other side. And they're in the shot, like, the whole time. Like, basically, you can see them sitting behind him the entire time. And then everybody in Congress sits in their seats, and then there's guests and other people all up in the gallery. So, and the rules include sort of, they're not, like, there are formal rules about the walking in, the thing, the speaker has to introduce him, then he starts giving a speech. But the theatrics come in what everybody does during the speech. Like, when the president says things that, you know, the Republican Party likes, when it's a Republican president, in this case Trump, they all stand up and clap and cheer, and the Democrats all just sit there. And it's the opposite when Obama gave the speech, right? Obama gives a speech and everybody... Or Democrats stand up and clap and the Republicans just sit there. And then it's gotten so politicized. Now there's a group of congresswomen who sit and wear white. It's like some weird kind of Handmaid's Tale thing. It's what I always think when I see it. They never smile. They just stare. They just stare. Because Trump's giving the speech and they hate Trump. So meanwhile, you have Trump say something and half the people get up and are cheering and screaming, ooh, yay. And the other half is sitting quietly with their arms crossed, staring dead ahead as if they're in a whole nother reality. It's comical. But last night, it went next level. It started with Nancy Pelosi not actually doing the proper introduction. She's supposed to say, it is my high honor to introduce the President of the United States. And she didn't. She's just like, here's the president, basically. And then she sticks her hand out to shake his hand and he doesn't take it. And she quick pulls it back. It's such a, like, in your face. And he turns and he starts giving the speech. And it's odd to watch when people will and won't stand up and when they will and won't clap. Because you're riding a fine line, right? If you're the Democrats, you got to be careful because Trump isn't saying everything that only Republicans want to hear. What happens when he's honoring a military vet or talking about, you know, someone who had some incredible personal experience? Do you not clap for that? Do you not get up? No, you have to clap for that. But what about when he says he's going to fund, he's funded the military? Well, maybe you clap for that, maybe you don't if you're the Democrats. And it's a tricky thing because Nancy Pelosi is sitting behind him the whole time. So she's just staring with this straight look on her face. It's like it's Saturday Night Live-ish. And then she picks up her papers and keeps looking at him, like licking her lips and looking at her papers right in front of her face as he's talking. And sometimes as people are clapping, so he says something, everybody stands up and clapping, she's looking at the piece of paper, shuffling through it. The piece of paper is the speech. Like, what, she's looking ahead to see what he's going to say next? I mean, and the drama that Trump created was massive. I don't care whether you like Trump or not. It was full-on reality show theatrics. I mean, there was a black vet who comes back from service, drugs, gets addicted, loses his job, loses his family, and then through an opportunity zone program, gets it all back. Now he's got a trade and a job and he's got his family back and he's free of drugs and he's sitting out there and he's missing a tooth and all. It's like he couldn't cast the guy. And you know, Trump acknowledges him and what happened and we did and the guy stands up and everybody's cheering. Okay, then there's the mother. There's a mother with a four-year-old daughter from, I think, Philadelphia. And the daughter can't get into a school. The Trump administration's wanted to create school choice programs to deal with bad public schools, and this kid can't get in. This is what Trump did that no one else does. He announces in the State of the Union, but we've got a surprise. We got an opening, and your daughter gets into a school. And literally, they don't know. And it's you can tell they don't know. Like, the mother's like, what? And the kid's like, wait, what? I'm getting to go to the good school? And, you know, everybody's cheering. It's like they won a prize on a show. Sidebar here. The reality is, I'm going political here for a second, that the public school system in most every big city in America sucks. They are broken. They are bad. I went to a bad public school system. I got told that I shouldn't go to college, that I was meant for vocational school or going work in a local canning factory. I had learning disorders that weren't diagnosed. And I wasn't even the worst public school system you could get in. I was just in a bad one. I ended up going to Stanford Law School. They got it wrong. Our public school systems is, in most every major city, is a disaster. So don't tell me we can't do better. And don't tell me private and private partnership options aren't a solution. I worked I was on. I created a board for a inner city public high school in Los Angeles, which was a choice program, but it was within the public school system, but it was still a choice program, and it worked. Back to the State of the Union. You got the black vet. You got the young mom and daughter from Philly. Then you have a young teenager who wants to be in the space program, in the new Space Force. And he's sitting there and Trump's lauding him and what he's going to do and how well he's going to do. And then sitting next to him is his great-grandfather, who is one of the original Tuskegee Airmen, which was a black Air Force division within during World War II. And it back then it was segregated. So the black pilots and stuff were in their own division or regiment. And they, because it wasn't mixed. And these guys never got the attention they should have gotten. And more recently, they've been honored, and it's come out, and there have been films made. But here's this guy, this kid's great-great-grandfather. And he's 100 years old today, or yesterday. It's his birthday. And the dude, like, gets up four times because people keep clapping for him, and he keeps getting up and standing. I'm thinking, man, this guy's in good shape. He's 100. He's up, he's down. He's up, he's down. He looks fantastic. One of the first black fighter pilots in the United States, 100 years old. And then Trump announces that he's been made a brigadier general. He's an honorary general. It's General, we salute you. And, you know, the guy standing up and saluting, it's like, wow. You're like, this is cool. Like, it's fun to watch. And, of course, just to throw some spice in the reality mix, he introduces Rush Limbaugh, who's just been diagnosed with terminal cancer, and has him stand up. Now, of course, this I do not expect Democrats to cheer for. They hate Rush Limbaugh. But he during the State of the Union, says, Rush, you are going to get the highest civilian award there is, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And Melania is going to give it to you right now. And she gives him the award, drapes it over his shoulders right there. Again, don't expect Democrats to cheer for that one. Rush is tears in his eyes. The guy who's always, you know, been on for 20 years, you can tell is totally overcome. And Republicans love it. Like it or not, it's good drama. But then there was the biggest one of all. He talks about a young wife and mother whose husband is on his fourth deployment and how hard it is for the spouses of those in military service to hold the fort down. And you see this woman, she's sitting there and she's got two kids or three, I don't know, two, I think. And the little girl, and the little boy, again, he's like two. She's kind of staring around, like looking out over the railing as the cameras are on him, oblivious, kind of like tired and lost. And the mom's pulling him back and trying to rein him in and hold him together. It just is like, again, he's making the point, like she's trying to hold it all together. And she looks tired. She just looks like, God, this is I'm glad to be here, but. And he says, well, we couldn't keep the president. He says, well, we just couldn't keep your husband away any longer. And he's here. And you look up and he comes walking down the steps behind her. She has no idea. Her face, she is like, oh, my God. And even the kid, the little boy, looks up and like bewildered. Like, what? And then you see the daughter hugs the dad and he picks the little boy up and you see the little boy starts crying. And I'm getting choked up now. Like, it was moving. It was humanity. Seeing a guy who's away from his family, serving his country in the military, in combat zones. And he gets reunited, a surprise reuniting with his wife on national television. I mean, if you even get like, love seeing people like get proposals and stuff on, you know, on the fan cams at a game. I mean, this is 10 times that. I don't know how you could not be moved watching that. What it said about just us as people. Nancy Pelosi wasn't moved. No, I think she probably was. But again, she's in a tough spot. Does she clap for that? Does she not? Of course, for that one, you have to clap. Everybody has to clap. I mean, they got so much standing ovation. It was crazy. Drama. And fun to watch. Now, you would think, by the way, if you listen to the substance of Trump's speech, you would think that in any normal universe, Democrats would be kind of leaping out of their seats hearing what the president actually said, not the Rush Limbaugh stuff and not the border stuff and illegal immigration, because those are pretty divisive issues, and not the stuff around abortion, again, because those are ones that tend to divide on left-right party lines. But, you know, talking about the whole first part of the speech was about how we have the lowest unemployment in 50 years and for minorities and black Americans and growing wages for the lowest wage earners and millions of people getting off food stamps and off welfare. Full funding for all historically black colleges in the United States. Genuine criminal justice reform for the first time in nearly 20 years that allows nonviolent offenders to get out of prison and get a second chance. Guaranteeing Social Security and Medicare and protecting people with pre-existing health conditions on their insurance. Paid family leave for all federal workers. Taking on Big Pharma and saying, we are going to continue to fight to lower prescription drug prices. It goes on. I mean, talked about fighting human trafficking, rebuilding America's infrastructure, ensuring Wi-Fi to those in the most rural communities. All these things you would think Democrats would be cheering for. If a Democratic president said those things, they'd be up on their feet going crazy. But we don't live in a normal universe. So they were not up on their feet, not even clapping, just sitting, staring straight ahead, sitting on their hands. That's how divided we are politically as a country. And it's sad, because I think the truth is most of us want those things. I don't care which side of the aisle you're on, left, right, Democrat, Republican, independent. Everything I just said is a good thing. Every one of those accomplishments is a good thing. It is a good thing that we have the lowest unemployment in 50 years. It is a good thing that millions of people are getting off food stamps and off welfare. It is a good thing that there's paid family leave for all federal workers. It is a good thing that drug prices are going to come down and the fight against Big Pharma will make a dent that helps people. It's a good thing that pre-existing conditions will be covered by all health insurers. It is a good thing that we are creating vocational. One of the things he put out was making sure there's a vocational training option in every single high school. That is a good thing. Not every kid wants to go to college, nor should. It's a waste of time for a lot of people. And they do need that training, and it's valuable to give them a different path. But because Trump did it, one side will never admit it. And that's too bad. But let me say this. What happened last night, the show that went on, was something I couldn't have happened 5, even 10 years ago. And even the fact, like, you can say what you want. People love to say Trump's a racist, a white supremacist, anti-Semitic. I don't buy it. Just even watching the State of the Union, you're not going to put all those people, you're not going to put all those minorities up, you're not going to put all those black people up, you're not going to put all those initiatives up that all benefit people who are lower income, people who aren't white, just for political gain. If you're a true diehard racist, you don't care. You can't. It's in your blood. You don't move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. You don't have Israel calling Trump a true friend of Israel. You don't create massive opportunity zones that primarily benefit black people. Again, criminal justice reform that primarily benefits black people. And you don't highlight them if you're a racist. It goes against your instincts, and politicians play to their instincts and to their base. And again, I don't believe the Trump base is a bunch of racists either. That's just more part of the attempt to divide, divide, divide that seems to be sweeping through America. I don't think Trump's a racist, but what I do think is he's breaking a lot of old and tired institutions and changing the rules, going against the system and challenging it over and over and over again. And oddly enough, that's what the Founding Fathers did. I don't think most people would like the Founding Fathers today. I think they'd find them too radical. At their time, they were radical. They were breaking down institutions and building new ones. They weren't upholding them. We're upholding the ones they built. It's like I say about Jesus. If Jesus came back today, would the Catholic Church like him? I'm not saying anything bad about the Catholic Church. I'm just saying, would most established, organized orthodoxy religions like Jesus if he came back? Probably not, because Jesus was a radical. He sort of was throwing out the system. He went against it. He was a rebel. Now, I am not saying Trump is Jesus. Not even close. Not even in the same ballpark. Nor is he even the Founding Fathers. Again, not even close. Not in the same ballpark. But I am saying this. Trump is breaking all kinds of rules in a good way. He is clearing the path for other people to come in and build new things. And we need new things. Our current system, our current institutions have been stuck and broken. They need to be broken down and new things built on them from both sides, because we need to start coming together. And I will say this. Donald Trump has made politics fun again. You cannot deny it. He has made it entertaining. Now you can go, well, it shouldn't be. Why shouldn't it be? Why should it be boring so nobody wants to do it? And only the people then who most want it, who can hold on to their little chunks of power, run and play and do it. No, politics should be fun so everyone wants in. Politics should be like the Super Bowl, like football, like a sport, like basketball, like soccer. Politics should be like the Oscars. Politics should be something we want to watch, we want to participate in. And if nothing else, Trump has got us all watching, all engaged, on both sides. And that's something we need now more than ever. I'm Rob Nelson. Something to think about.